You are listening to Think Theory Radio. Hello and welcome to Think Theory Radio, the show that brings you topics outside the mainstream realm of thought and ideas to make you think. And I'm your host, Damian Perdue, your serpentine guide on this occult ride of mythological delights. And of course, I'm joined by Pauly C. Nice. And the C could stand for coil.
Not cobra.
Or cobra.
Yeah.
Damn. Damn, better one. I was saying coil because like a coiled snake.
That's better because I mean like otherwise cobra just it excludes so many snakes.
True, yeah. You can't exclude all the snakes, man. There's too many snakes. You know how many snakes there are?
Lots.
Like 10,000 snakes.
10,000 snakes?
Something
I think
like
I
that.
Saw that band.
And that's because today we're going to talk about snakes on an astral plane.
Get these.
Can't totally imitate that line from that famous movie.
I mean, it's been enough time that we can kind of reiterate this fun fact that there was no like title. It was like a working title of Snakes on a Plane before they were going to name the movie. And then Sam Jackson. No, and then I think either Sam Jackson got cast.
Okay.
Or he was about to get cast. And it was like, well, then he's, you know, they're like, well, don't change the title. And he has to say in the movie, get these MFing snakes off this MFing plane. So they wrote that in afterwards.
Just fit it
on
in.
A plane. Yeah, I think the working title was Snakes on a Plane.
Serpent and the Rainbow is a good.
And this has been Paul's Fuzzy Memories.
Yeah. Although Serpent and the Rainbow really didn't have much to do with snakes.
Yeah.
It was more to do with zombies.
Oh, okay. I would not have gathered that.
It was a book, too.
I would not have gathered that from the title.
Came out when I was young. I really liked it. It was very trippy, and this guy was investigating these murders in Haiti. But it was basically they're using this drug, this hallucinogenic drug, to make people think they were dead. And then they would give them the antidote. You know, but they would be all drugged out, so they would appear like zombies, and they would tell their families that they were zombies, and they would get money from them and stuff like that.
I swear this was a Miami Vice plot
it
line.
It might have been, too, yeah. And now people are really confused, wondering, so
what does any of this have to do with anything?
About? We're just talking about snake movies. That's it today.
Snakes, yeah.
We're actually talking about the oldest mythological symbol and religious cult worshipped animal in the world, the serpent or the snake. Did you know that is the most out of every culture, every society, every country? There's snake worship or some kind of snake deity.
I suppose, you know, I think of like snake charmers and then of course what the Garden of Eden, wasn't it a snake?
And that's,
or an asp. I don't know what's the difference.
Or a seraph.
Seraph, yeah. Well, that's a new one for me. I've never heard of that one.
I'm getting into it.
All right.
And actually, this is I've thought about this for years because you have kind of serpent image. Snake is always deemed as something evil because of the Garden of Eden story, right? But if you go back before that, serpents were revered. Snakes were revered in ancient Egypt and, you know, in the Mayans, Aztecs, ancient Chinese mythology. And so it's always kind of like, well, why did they become so associated with evil to the point that like that's actually the number two phobia? I don't know if it's worldwide or just in the U.S., but the number two phobia is the fear of snakes.
Okay, so
it's spiders and then snakes.
One, I think it's like the creepiness factor.
Yeah.
But I also, it's like, you remember in The Big Lebowski where he's like, oh man, I hate the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And like the cab driver throws them out. And I've met so many people since then that are like, I hate the Eagles. And it's like, you can't even name five songs by them. Where did that opinion come from? So I'm wondering if Indiana Jones has influenced a lot of people's opinions because Indiana Jones hates snakes.
True. Yeah. True. I'm sure that has a little influence, yeah. But I probably think the Bible has a bigger influence.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, that's the Bible. I don't know. In this day and age, pop culture usually.
That's true, but they have.
I don't want to get into some John Lennon territory.
Hey, let's do it. You know, and I thought about doing the show because I was looking up.
Paul said Lebowski's bigger than Jesus.
And Paul the Apostle
hey,
is actually, he's one of the main reasons that the snake serpent got used, became like a main story as in the Garden of Eden and relating it to Satan.
Oh, really?
Because in the Old Testament, it wasn't really like that.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a snake, but it was never really specifically said it was the devil or anything like that. It wasn't until Paul... your namesake.
Yeah.
He came out and said, no, this was Satan.
I'm a person named Paul that went to Catholic school. I definitely did a report on the apostle.
But I was looking up stuff about Irish mythology, right? And of course, you have St. Patrick.
Yeah, driving all the snakes.
Yeah, which is, you know, that's a whole, you know, metaphorical analogy for paganism, they say. But there's a lot of different, especially if you get on the internet. And you find, you know, all the different conspiracy theories, you know, that this was, you know, driving out these people or this was, you know, then I found one. Actually, a buddy sent it to me and I'd seen it before, but it was about that there was a serpent religion that ran the world, you know, before Christianity, before the major religions. And these there were, you know, of course, I'm pretty sure they tied it into aliens. I don't know, but I think it was there.
Okay.
Right. either aliens or reptilians. It, you know, there was some tie in there. And there was, you know, the serpent religion that ran the world. And when the whole thing with St. Patrick driving out the snakes was a way for them to, you know, get rid of this serpent religion and demonize it. So I just thought, you know, well, let me look into not actually that, like, you know, because there wasn't a serpent religion that dominated the world. But there was a lot of serpent imagery in every single culture. And not only that, but I started finding out other, you know, little different conspiracy theories relating to the serpent in the Garden of Eden and the Serpent Mound in Ohio and some QAnon stuff. And then I even found, you know, some quantum physics with serpents. You know, I had to tie in a little quantum physics and cosmological diagrams.
Yeah.
You know, to tie it all in. So we'll get into some of that stuff. Before we do, let's take a call real quick. Yeah, Jim. What's going on, Jim?
Hi, guys. I was thinking about my buddy. He was drafted and he went to Vietnam. And his job was to put venom strapped on his back. And anybody bit by a snake, he would give them the venom and save their life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So his first departure into the jungle, he's walking along to save somebody, and a snake comes out and bites him. So he's trying to hit the pack off his back to give himself the venom, and he can't do it, right? So he's laying there dying. Luckily, he was found. They strapped him out of the helicopter. He's throwing up all over the place. He almost died. And every time we were at the track, we'd get beat the phone. He said, well, Jim, I get bit by a snake. Yeah, it's a true story. That's wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that was a job. Because the snakes were plentiful in Vietnam. If you get bit by a snake there, you die of poisoning, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that was his job. He got bit right as soon as he got off the helicopter. He was walking to save somebody, and he got bit by a snake.
That's so crazy.
And he didn't know how to get it. He couldn't get it off his back and save himself. So he lucky he lived. It was really wild. Anyway, just like.
Curious. All right, well, yeah, thanks.
Good night. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. That was snakes off a plane.
Yeah.
Or a helicopter, rather.
Yeah. Hey, no, I like it. I got the joke.
Yeah, that's it. You know, actually, we were talking about getting bit by snakes, and that's one of the reasons there's a big fear of them, but they're actually, it's a very small percentage of snakes that are poisonous. I think it's like less than 5% of all snakes are actually poisonous.
Less than 5%?
Yeah, something like that.
Crazy. Okay. That's kind of like spiders, too, though, right? Aren't there?
Yeah.
Like, there's not that many that are poisonous
right.
Compared to how many are out there.
Yeah, and I think even, like, tarantulas aren't that, you know, dangerous, but people have a big fear of them because of, like, horror movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you could have, like, a tarantula as a pet, although we're not talking about them. That'll be
nice.
Another show.
They're furry
ancient spiders. But, yeah, if you go back... one of the oldest mythology of any kind of serpent is in the San people of Botswana in Africa goes back 70,000 years. And researchers have found evidence of a serpent in these old human rituals from that area. And you could look in where else in West African kingdom of Dahomey regarded snakes as immortal because they appear to be reincarnated from themselves when they slough their skins. And they're often associated with immortality because they were observed biting their tails from a circle. When they coiled, they formed spirals. We're talking about the coil. And that has often become a symbol of eternity, which you get the Ouroboros. You know the Ouroboros symbol, where it's like the snake eating the tail. It's just a round circle. It's really old. It's one of the oldest kind of symbols and hieroglyphs. But it goes back. I think the oldest one they've found is from China. It's like 5,000 years old. But it's been used in Norse mythology, many others. And in Serer cosmology and religion, the serpent is a symbol of the Pangul, the saints and ancestral spirits of the Serer people of West Africa. The Dogon people of Mali also have a great reverence for the serpent. The serpent plays an active role in the Dogon religion and cosmogony. The mythology of the Dogon's primordial ancestor, Libe, or Lib, It's based almost entirely on a serpent mythology. In their traditional African religious belief, they say that the serpent Libe guided the Dogon people from the Mande to the Badiagara escarpment, which is their current home. I believe it's in Mali. I could be wrong with that one. And then, you know, we'll get into some more, but I was going back to the Garden of Eden story because you brought that up. And the Satan and the devil and getting Eve to bite the apple from the tree, the forbidden tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, originally in the Old Testament, it was just described as a snake. But then in the New Testament of St. Paul, it changed it into being a representation of Satan. And I thought it was interesting that you have all these old religions that and spiritual mythologies that believe the snake was something of a creator deity, you know, was a metaphor for immortality, fertility, something kind of to be praised for thousands of years. You're going on 70,000 years ago to 2,000 years ago, right? So like 68,000 years. There was a more deeper regard for the serpent than the last 2,000 years because of the Garden of Eden story, which is the main proponent of snakes representing evil. Right? Okay. Now, if you dig into this stuff, I was digging in, you find out that the snake also is tied into the mother goddess.
Okay.
And the mother goddess ties into the tree of life. Now, in the Garden of Eden, you had the tree of life. And that was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that God told Adam and Eve not to eat from.
Yeah.
Right? Now, the serpent was supposed to be like a guardian of this tree, supposedly.
Yeah.
So the theory is they were trying to extinguish the mother goddess deity, who originally in the Old Testament, the original writings, there was Asherah was the mother goddess. There was Yahweh, who was the God, who became, over time, became God. That's what Christians call God. It originally was Yahweh. But in the beginning, there was Yahweh and there was Asherah. And Asherah was the female goddess. But then over time, they got rid of her.
Listen, the powers that be, the patriarchy.
And I was reading something saying how it transitioned, especially with the version of the Christian story, the Garden of Eden. It did. It transitioned from, even within the story itself, from kind of a matriarchal thing to a patriarchal system where you had Eve in the beginning. She's the one that made the decision for the pair of them. Right.
Yeah.
So she's the one saying, hey, this you know, little homie told me to eat this apple. We'll learn about good and evil. She made the decision for the two.
And Adam followed suit because men will do crazy things.
Right. Especially for a naked woman.
Yeah.
Although they didn't know they were naked, I guess.
She had leaves covering.
Right? That was after.
Shame. Yeah.
That was after they ate.
And every picture I've seen, the white Adam and Eve were wearing leaves.
Right. And then, but then after that, you know, when they get banished from the garden, Adam becomes the patriarch. And they're, you know, forward on, it's about the lineage of Adam and Noah, you know, and going down the line where it's the men running things. So there are theories that this was kind of the departure from thousands of years of mother goddess worship to the patriarchal system of the one God who is always represented as a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always say God is a he in these religions, right? So I thought that was an interesting take. And I've read other books too. There's one called The Genius of the Few, and it's written, it's by Christian O'Brien, and it's a really good breakdown of the Sumerian creation myth, which is pretty much where all of the major, the Abrahamic religions got their kind of stories from. And then, you know, with like the Epic of Gilgamesh and all that stuff. And then he compares that to the Christian version of the Garden of Eden and the Hebrew Old Testament version of the Garden of Eden. Now, he talks about, and this guy was an entomologist, who's an archaeologist. He had a crazy life, but he broke down the word serpent in, and I do have that here, find it. He basically was breaking down what serpent meant, and he believes it didn't actually mean a snake. And the English word, this is him writing, the English word is derived from the Latin serpens with the basic root of SRP. So if you go back to the Hebrew when they didn't have the vowels, right? Which through sound shifts within the Indo-European language would also incorporate SRB, SRF, SRPH, and SRV. In this context, the original voiced plosive B, for example, became the voiceless plosive P through the Germanic speaking peoples. And he goes on to, you know, shows the different words that have these, this kind of root of SRV in it, like serve, to perform a duty, survey, to examine, survive, to outlive, you know, and then to seraph, which I brought up earlier, which is an angel of love. Right. And so there's a group of angels, the plural is seraphim. And that comes from the Hebrew term Rapha, which meant healer or surgeon or doctor. So he's saying that the word that became serpent, seraph or seraphim, were actually healers. Or he calls them medical angels.
Okay.
That'd be a good Netflix show.
Medical angels.
Medical angels.
Coming to CBS this fall.
Oh, they're like doing surgery. and then it's interesting too that in the story when Moses brought the people into the desert and they escaped out of Egypt, they started getting, you know, God smited them.
Is it smote?
Maybe he smote them.
I don't know. So now I'm just making things up. I don't know. Is it smite or smote?
Smote sounds about right.
Yeah.
He smote them because they weren't worshiping him enough or something like that. I don't know. He's a very jealous God, this God. And
smote.
Okay. He smoted them.
No, smote.
Smote. Okay. He smote them.
It's not Murder, She Wrote-ed.
You're right. It's not?
Yeah.
No. And he threw a bunch of, they call them seraphs, which in Hebrew was also some kind of fiery snake or something. And he flooded their encampment with these snakes. People were getting bit. Moses, you know, spoke up to God like, hey, man, you know, my bad. I'm sorry. We didn't praise you enough. Like, can you do something? And he said, now lift up this snake, this seraph, put it on top of a pole, turn it into bronze or copper, and tell people to kiss the snake or whatever, and then they get healed. So it's interesting that the word seraph is used for this snake that becomes a healing power on top of a pole, right? which think about the, what is it, the caduceus or the caduceus, which is the medical symbol.
Okay.
Right?
Oh,
with
yeah,
the two
yeah,
snakes
yeah.
going
yeah.
around the pole. Now that, think about that imagery. Put this bronze snake on a pole. He turns it to the bronze and then it heals people. It's very much like the caduceus, which is the old Greek symbol, but actually comes from Sumerian. Right.
Yeah.
So here we are back to Sumeria with the creation, the ancient, the Sumerian creation, the codices, which is the oldest written text by humans in the world that we have found, you know, cuneiform Sanskrit, and has these original creation myths. So what Christian O'Brien was saying, that he believes that these serpents were actually healers. So then I think about the Garden of Eden, and he says this in the book, too. Now, what if this serpent that was in the Garden of Eden was not actually a snake, but it was a healer? Right. And if you take that in context with Lucifer being an angel, the angel were the seraphim, they were healers. He's telling them to eat this apple. Apple is healing from the tree of life, which represents the mother goddess. Right. The healing.
Okay. Yeah.
Comes from the earth. Yeah. Right. But then it was God who told them, don't eat from that tree. So it's an interesting, if you want to, now I know a lot of people are going to be like, no, wait, it's, you know, he was tricking them. You know, he was doing something bad. He got them kicked out of the Garden of Eden. But think about this. God told them that if they ate from this tree, they would die.
Which was not the truth.
Which is not the truth. They ate from the tree. They learned of good and evil. They became like God because only God could see good and evil. Right. And then they got kicked out of the garden. But then Adam lived to be like 960 years old. So he didn't die. Like, you know, so the devil, supposedly, or this serpent healer, whatever this thing was, obviously it's all a metaphor, but
apple peddler.
Oh, that old apple peddler. There's a worm in an apple.
Yeah,
see?
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, he was telling them, hey, eat from this and gain knowledge. Yet he's deemed the evil one, and he was trying to give people knowledge. Isn't giving people knowledge a good thing?
Yeah.
Right?
We try to do that here.
I try. But then we have to take commercial breaks, and I have to stop. All right, I'm going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to get into a little bit of some more snake mythology, but also how does it relate to quantum physics and the cosmological constant? More on Think Theory Radio right after this.
Still plays the records at the Snake Farm. Snake Farm, it just sounds nasty. Snake Farm, pretty much is. Snake Farm, it's a reptile house. Snake Farm.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio, live from the Snake Farm, aka the Garden of Eden. The Garden in Eden.
Yeah.
Or the Garden off of the Edens.
There's got to be one, right? Yeah.
Let's get to Bob in Indiana because he wants to talk about the Garden of Eden. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, boys. How are you doing?
Good.
How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
Two things. One, just to repeat, you should be on at least 2 hours, not one.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, number two. I was listening to you talking about the Garden of Eden, the snake, Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And a correlation popped into my head.
Uh-oh.
This sounds like Washington.
Oh, yeah.
When yeah, somebody would do something that upset someone who used to be in Washington.
Uh-huh.
They were immediately thrown out and punished.
Mm-hmm. Like a tyrannical leader? or non-leader?
Yeah. You know, and he was kind of, and he's also kind of gold colored, sun colored, orange colored. Anyways, it's just like, you know, this ain't new.
Uh huh.
You know.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I think that's people have made that kind of correlation as, you know, that story actually being, you know, the devil is the rebel against tyranny, like a tyrannical God.
Yeah, you know? I can definitely see that correlation without a doubt.
You know,
but anyways, like I said, I just wanted to point that one out and again say you need to be on at least 2 hours, not one.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob.
Okay, later, brother.
You have a great night.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I get where he was going. Yeah, the tyrannical leaders, you know, they get mad, they throw hissy fits, and they want to throw people out the garden that don't agree with them. You know, and I think that's kind of what that, to me, when I read it, that's what that story kind of, you know, because if you think about, you know, not to harp too much on, you know, Yahweh and all that stuff, but just, it's always very, so much spite, right? It's always.
Yeah, the body count, the kill count for the Lord is kind of make you wondering, like, which side should I be on here?
Yeah. And there's, I was reading about, like, you know, before that, when you had Yahweh and Asherah, which was, Asherah was the female god, the counterpart, which somehow just disappeared in mythology and, you know, the Abrahamic faiths. They don't talk about her anymore. And she was more of the goddess of the earth, right? That kind of more connected to life on earth, where Yahweh was more the god in the sky, you know, the observer, the guy who doesn't want to get his hands dirty and just sits up in the clouds looking down on people. And yet he's the one that took over. And but, you know, going back to some of these other mythologies, it's pretty cool because, like, all of them there, it's really interesting, though, that there's so many of them that believed the serpents were a creator god. So in Australia, the Aborigines believed in the rainbow serpent, that it was a main creator god. In the Amazonas, the great anaconda was seen as the creator of human beings. And go to, you know, one of my favorite places in the world, Mexico. And you go to the ancient Mayan, Aztec, Toltecs, and they believed in the plumed serpent or the feathered serpent, Quetzalcoatl, or in Mayan, it was Kukulkan. And they had different names for this god who was also personified as kind of a man with a white beard. There's different, you know, it's similar to other mythologies where he kind of had a double life, you know, he was a warrior in one hand, but also a creator god in the other. He was the calendrical signature of the nine wind. And I was reading this article written by an author named Carl Johan Kalman. And he started to make the correlation between the plumed serpent and the sine wave. Right. Like the sine wave is the mathematical symbol, right, of a wave function, mm-hmm, or frequency. And that, what if the ancient people had a concept that they essentially hid with mythology and symbolism of some kind of a mathematical system, you know, representing time? Because he was saying how if you take the Mayan calendar and how it's broken down into these eras, which basically are 300, a baktun is called, but it's 3,943 years. And there's these peaks, like a pendulum that goes up and down, right? And if you actually overlay that through, like, human history, you can see it corresponding to the major civilizations that go up and down, like the last, like, 7,000, 10,000 years. So, you know, I like the little kind of, you know, it might be a stretch, but it's an interesting concept that what if they had, you know, a kind of knowledge, or, you know, maybe it was just like a kind of esoteric thing where they knew how history was cyclical and how there's ups and downs, and they were using the serpent to kind of represent that with its, you know, up and down wave. And it is actually, I've been to Chichen Itza where they have the main temple, and on certain days of the year where the sun shines on it, it creates a serpent going down the stairs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's like an up and down, you know, kind of a wave signature. And I just thought that was a kind of like an interesting correlation or parallel. But there was other ones. I found another one, which actually this is not a metaphor, but this is actually physicists at the Georgia Institute of Technology, Daniel Goldman and his colleagues. They started to use snakes, the Western shovel-nose snake in particular, to inspire new types of limbless robots that could traverse complex environments. But when they started watching and studying these snakes, they noticed that the paths taken by the reptiles bear a striking resemblance to the trajectories of quantum particles.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so it says, you know, but they, what they were saying is they want to incorporate some of the principles by the living systems of these snakes to have to create limbless robots, which I thought was an interesting kind of thing, because of the way snakes can kind of just, they almost kind of defy the laws of physics, you know, because they'll like, you know, the way they move without arms and legs, but they'll kind of bounce up and go different ways that you wouldn't think to do. And they were saying in previous work, Crab Labs, Jennifer Reiser discovered that when a snake-like robot moving with a simple wave pattern collided with an obstacle, it interacted persistently until it pushed past and moved off at an angle to this initial trajectory. And they used 8 blindfolded snakes that placed one creature at a time into a carpeted arena with a 1D lattice of dowel posts. A high-speed camera was used to track the snakes as they performed 253 maneuvers through the lattice. It says, when we put the snakes down in the arena, they started moving using the same waveform they use on Desert Stand. They would then encounter the dowel grating, pass through it, and continue on the other side, still using that waveform. And they said the first and most unusual observation the physicists made was the overall pattern of the snakes emerged from the lattice was very similar to how photons interact with the diffraction grating. Goldman was surprised to see this and explains, in the quantum world, you see individual particles interacting with a regular array and emerging in preferred angles. But I didn't expect to see such phenomenon when working on animals and robots. So it's kind of like macro meets the micro, or macro imitating the micro. But I thought it was interesting that just because I was just looking up things with about kind of the there's the thing called the cosmological serpent, which was developed in 1979 by Nobel Prize winning physicist Sheldon Glashow. And he was the first to suggest the Ouroboros. Remember, I was talking earlier, the snake biting its tail, the circle image. It's an old mythological symbol. And he was the first one to suggest it as a visual descriptor of the connection with and the unification of the extremes of size and scale in the universe. And they call it the cosmic Ouroboros or the cosmological serpent. And there's a couple of videos you can look up on YouTube, and it's pretty cool because it's essentially, you imagine the universe as this circle snake with the tail, where it starts with the tail and the head is actually the Planck scale. So the smallest particle, the smallest way to measure a particle down and around through to the other side of the head of the snake basically essentially goes in the direction of higher states of matter into the universe, right? So it goes from this Planck scale to the particle scale, to the molecular, to the atomic, to the amoeba, biological, to the humans, to, you know, the atmosphere, the sky, the solar system, the galaxy, and then the universe, and then back around again. And what he was saying is how it's kind of like the universe has this fractal nature to itself, where the farther you go into, you know, quantum physics and the particle physics, you will eventually reach a point where you're kind of like at a massive universe. And the interesting thing is where humans fit within this cosmic Ouroboros is right in the center. So we are the balance between the smallest part of the universe and the largest part of the universe. And we're right smack dab in the middle. Adam and Eve. You know, what's interesting is The Simpsons, you know, did that. They did the cosmic Ouroboros fractal scale thing in their intros. It's the one where they zoom out, which actually it's so there's a video from, I believe, 79, 77 that actually, and it's cool because it starts from Chicago. It starts from the lakefront of Chicago, zooms all the way out, you know, so you see the Earth and then out in the solar system, out space, and then into molecular structures until next to know you're back on the skin of a hand of the guy on the lake side.
Okay.
So they did that in The Simpsons, where they zoom out and out and out all the way to the, you know, they go through all the molecules, and then you're on Homer's head.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure
I know I've seen it. It's not ringing a bell. I mean, it's like I vaguely remember. I'm just trying to remember what the punchline or the joke was to it. And I know I'm going to confuse it with the one where it shows, like, evolution. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Homer starts out as a single-celled organism and evolves his way up, and it's like it ends with him coming home and sitting down on the couch, and he's just like, long day.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
yeah.
Where have you been? I know I'm messing that one up too, but that was essentially the joke.
Yeah, I don't know if it was, I don't think it was the same one, but.
No, it's a different one, but it's like the brain can't get that, but I know what you're talking about, where it's like it zooms out and it ends up on Homer's.
And I wouldn't remember that, but they talked about it in this Cosmic Ouroboros video, and it was saying how that one was actually used like several times. Where a lot of them don't get used that many times, but that one was a favorite of Mr. Groening. Mm. And the Ouroboros we brought up is actually, to get a little deeper into that, is the ancient symbol depicting a serpent eating its own tail. It entered Western tradition via ancient Egyptian iconography and the Greek magical tradition. It was adopted as a symbol in Gnosticism and Hermeticism, and most notably in alchemy. And the term derives from the ancient Greek, which means aura means tail, plus boros means eating. So,
all right.
A little bit on the Ouroboros. And we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll get into conspiracies of serpents right after this on Think Theory Radio. Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today we're talking about people and their fear of snakes. And I think Dan and Lombard. I don't know if you have a fear of snakes, but...
Nah, but, you know, they are kind of creepy. Not sure. I think it was Descartes. Couldn't figure out organic carbon bonding, and he had a fever dream, like a nightmare about snakes eating their tails. And that's, in fact, like carbons have that hexagonal structure when they have double valence bonds or whatever. You know, high school was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Bottom line is he had a dream of snakes eating their tails, and that's how he worked out. And that kind of builds into your alchemy. Mm. Almost the dawn of chemistry, right?
Yeah.
Is we're trying to figure out how things are organized chemically. And if I remember correctly, he dreamt of snakes eating their tails. How's that?
I like it.
Yeah, it's another Dan obscure reference. So, you know.
It fits in perfectly.
There we go. Yep. You guys have a great one. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. And, you know, speaking of like the mystical nature, I was reading too about when people do ayahuasca. Which we have to do a whole show on ayahuasca. We have to do ayahuasca.
Wait. No, I was going to ask. Wait, do you mean do the show under the influence of ayahuasca, or do a show about ayahuasca?
Both.
Because I, you know, as being on the clock, I should probably play the safe guy during.
We could pre-record it on your off day.
Can we bring Aaron Rodgers? Will it make me a better quarterback?
Right, there you go. But, you know, there's the shamans and a high number of recorded people when they take ayahuasca. And actually, I was hanging with a friend of mine last night, my buddy Joe, and he told me on his experience on ayahuasca, he actually saw the same thing where you see these coiled snakes, right?
Interesting.
And he said that on his, he saw these like doorways and like portals that believed were other kind of like dimensions of reality, but he was a little nervous to go through. Yeah, but that made me think about the man who figured out the double helix, Francis Crick.
Okay.
And how he figured out the double helix when he was on LSD.
Yeah.
Right? Which is another psychedelic drug like ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was it because, I don't know, I don't think he's really described what he saw. He just admitted that he was on LSD when he figured it out. But what if he saw snakes?
Hmm.
Like how the ayahuasca people see coiled snakes, right? Now, think of what is like the DNA symbol is the caduceus or the caduceus, the...
Yeah.
The double helix snakes mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that represent healing and wisdom, right?
Okay, okay.
And is our DNA structure. And then the Kundalini, which is an ancient Indian Hindu belief system with the chakras, and that at the bottom of your spine is a coiled female snake.
Okay.
Like an energy snake. And that in order to line up your chakras and have them light up, you have to make this snake uncoil and rise up through your spine to the crown chakra. And that's how you gain enlightenment.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. It just when he brought up discard made me think
about
stuff. My
inner snake is dead.
You could bring it back with some ayahuasca.
I think I buried him under some hamburgers.
I think you can bring it back, dude, with some ayahuasca.
Don't tempt me with a good time.
But it's interesting, like, you know, because I always like to think, did the ancients people know more? Were they putting, you know, little kind of codes within their symbolism? You know, and the one guy who's writing about the Kukulkan, the plume serpent, was saying that he believed the ancient peoples were aware of the nine underlying waves in the quantum field that drives evolution and the universe, planet, and humankind. And that's why they called it the nine wind serpent.
Hmm.
So another little interesting correlation. But I did tease some conspiracy theories because, you know, what would Think Theory Radio be like without conspiracy theories?
See, but you did hit the quantum physics.
I did.
And you did mention the Epic of Gilgamesh.
I brought in.
There's been a lot of boxes checked on this episode.
I know. Ancient history, archaeology, religion, quantum physics, psychedelics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ran the gamut.
Yes.
High-end baseball.
Cosmology,
somehow.
Right. Well, a bat is kind of like that.
It's an Arizona Diamondbacks.
Was there a pitcher named something Snake? I feel like Snake would be a good baseball nickname.
Joe Snake Barnes. Famous Raiders quarterback Ken Stabler was the Snake.
Oh, okay.
Or yeah, just Snake Stabler.
That does not fit.
He was awesome, though.
All right, that's true. I'll let it slide.
Snake
let it slide like a snake. Real quick, before we get to another phone call, the serpent seed conspiracy.
Okay.
Also, that would be a good death metal band, Serpent Seed. Is a belief that, and it's really taken up a lot by, like, racists and white supremacists.
Okay.
But that... the serpent, Satan, actually mated with Eve in the Garden of Eden. So he didn't just give her an apple. He gave her a little something else, you know what I'm saying? And that the offspring of their union was Cain.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay. And that the result created two races of people, the wicked descendants of the serpent and the righteous descendants of Adam, who would have been Abel, right? And that's why Cain killed Abel. And that all, you know, basically people that they deem as unworthy are the descendants of Cain, mm-hmm. the serpent seed. So, of course, this is taken up by, you know, Nazis and white supremacists. So it's, you know, Jewish people are serpent seed. Immigrants are, you know, serpent seed. anything like, you know, that goes against what they believe. Anything the serpent seed.
Not white and not American. And
yeah.
Not, okay.
And I was even, I watched a video and somebody there before the eclipse, and somebody was trying to do this whole like satanic correlation of the eclipse and NASA sending rockets up into space, and then and they named the rockets after some name that correlates to a serpent or something. This all because they worship the serpent, and this is all part of the, you know, the plan, and that's why this. And then just like, whoa, okay.
Maybe it's just because the internet has been a little bit more rampant than it was maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago. But I don't remember in 2017 hearing so many conspiracy theories and, you know, religious ideas, you know, because this one is like the rapture and the government's planting and, you know, doing certain things, or they're testing us or whatever. And I don't know how true this is, but I'd heard that a woman was gearing up for the eclipse and the rapture, and she ended up like tipping over $1,000 at this taco restaurant. And then on Tuesday, she was looking for her money back.
Oh, really? What?
The workers were like, hey, our checks went through already. You can't get your money back.
I mean, I think that it's hard to say if there's more of them or if they're more rampant, or it's just they're getting more
like louder.
They have a more space.
Yeah.
You know, where before it was very, you know, in the shadows, I guess, or you had to kind of search out the conspiracy theories, where now it's just, you know, if you're on TikTok or Facebook or Instagram, they send the stuff to you for you to watch.
Well, and not to go down this sort of tangent, but also, you know, how fun it is to make up conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
So you probably have trolls that don't believe it, that just kind of put it out into the ether.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And then you kind of have the fragile minded that glom onto it. And, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's totally what they're doing. And it's but you got to point A to point B.
And there's people that perpetuate it, whether they believe it or not, just because they know they'll gain followers.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
As it's just a kind of a way to become famous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a lot of that. I mean, I think that's...
Oh, it's a ton of reels that you see, like, you know, construction reels where a person does it wrong. Just they can have so many people being like, that's terrible. I hope you didn't get paid for that. You know, mm-hmm. But they're gaining the attention that they want.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, no, it's hard to tell. But there is another... speaking of crazy theories, and, you know, and the thing is, you know, people say, well, what does it matter or whatever? But there was one of the QAnon follower that killed his kids. Like his kids. He killed his own kids because he believed that they had the serpent seed. You know, it's like, what? And then there's the Serpent Mound in Ohio, which is one of the oldest effigy mounds in the world, and especially in the United States. And there's like these crazy theories, like there's these conspiracy theories that kind of threaten the, you know, the Serpent Mound itself and demean the native heritage. Right. Because people are saying, you know, is it a mine for spaceship fuel? Is it a portal to another dimension? Is it a place of hidden paranormal powers? You know, is it an ancient indigenous homage to the summer and winter solstice? According to the Ohio Historical Society, the organization manages the site. It's a 1,300 foot long, resembles an uncoiling serpent. And the original purpose of the mound is unknown. They don't really know who built it, but, you know, the tribes in the area believe that this is part of their heritage. But they have a lot of problems with people coming there and kind of desecrating the area because they believe all these conspiracy theories surrounding this serpent mound. So they're having problems kind of like trying to clear people out. I guess, you know, it's become a mecca for New Agers and everything. There was a story about these vandals who admit to muffin crystal thingy assault.
Okay.
That's what it says in this article. According to the story, a group of people from the organization Unite the Collective posted a video showing people burying what may be hundreds of small muffin-shaped devices called organites. Oh, organites, yeah. So Oregon, that's a whole other thing. That's actually, I wanted to do a show on the guy who discovered Oregon, if you want to say that, who also was the man who kind of originated the whole free sex movement.
Okay.
I'm trying to look up his name real quick. We only have like a minute left. Wilhelm Reich.
Okay.
So originally proposed in the 1930s, and he believed that orgone or orgone was the kind of energy, the life energy, the bioenergy of the universe, but also had this like sexual power. And he was, you know, pushing this back in the, you know, the 40s and 50s or whatever. And a lot of it was about free sex. And he built this orgone accumulator that supposedly would like transfer all the sexual energy in your body and give you more mental power and higher consciousness and stuff like that. So they what's his name? Woody Allen did a parody of it in one of his movies. It was the Orgasmatron.
Oh, okay.
People might know that from a movie, but that's based on the orgone accumulator. So yeah, I know that divergence, so, yeah, but when I say people like burying orgonite in the Serpent Mound, it just made me think of it. So, okay. All right, that's it for today's Serpentine Show. I want to thank everybody for listening and calling in. We'll be back again next week and every Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m. right here on WCPT H1A Think Theory Radio.
Number two, practice the snake style. He was known as the snake spirit. He had the speed of a snake.